Our third case for argument is Laveri v. Tranney. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is James Volling from the law firm of Faegre Baker Daniels. May it please the Court, I'm here on behalf of Mr. Kent Laveri. After remand from this Court and following discovery, the magistrate judge issued a report and recommendation that we believe was fatally flawed and that was not adopted by the district court. But the district court nevertheless denied Mr. Laveri's Brady claim on the basis that any suppression of evidence by the state was not material to the conviction, and that the claim could not be maintained based on the state's presentation of perjured testimony. This was reversible error. The state's conduct here denied Mr. Laveri a full opportunity to cross-examine both Mr. Archuleta, the snitch, and Detective Walker, the lead police investigator, at trial, and to show the jury that Mr. Laveri's alleged confession, the only direct evidence presented at trial linking him to the crime, never happened, and was in fact false and the product of police impropriety.
Now, in your briefing, as you just stated in your opening, you take issue with the writings of the district court. Our duty here, is a de novo review, and we're not really going to pick at what the district court did. I mean, we look at this anew. Is that not true?
It is true, Your Honor, but the district court never addressed the bases that the magistrate judge analyzed. We objected vociferously to the magistrate judge's report and recommendation.
Well, I appreciate that. But
and
I mean,
state,
I'm just saying that was then and this is now, and we're at de novo review. So if we move on to the merits of the issues, I think it's more helpful.
Your Honors can do, obviously, what Your Honors want to do. But
it's not quite that.
No, it's not maybe that wrong.
If only that were true.
Yeah. But clearly, Your Honor, we objected. The state never responded to those objections,
okay,
as the district court noted. So there's been no treatment of those issues below. So this court would be truly conducting a de novo proceeding in dealing with all of that.
Right.
I don't think that's really the best role of an appellate
court. Well, as a matter of de novo review, do we face the issue of whether suppression of evidence that is in the hands of the prosecution witnesses, that is, police departments, et cetera, not subject to Brady if the district attorney, or excuse me, if the prosecutor himself at the legal side of the level does not have that information?
Well, not for Brady purposes, not the suppression of evidence issue. The perjured testimony issue, Your Honor, that is one of the issues that is presented because it's being characterized as a NAPU claim. But I just want to be clear, and I was going to address this later, but I'll address it now. The district court held, and the state contends, that Mr. Laveri cannot maintain his Brady claim based on the perjured testimony of Archuleta and Walker.
Right.
The district court erred in concluding that Mr. Laveri is making a NAPU claim, and therefore requiring him to demonstrate that the prosecution had actual knowledge of Archuleta's and Walker's perjured testimony. However, Laveri is not attempting to take advantage of a lesser materiality standard that some courts have found applies under NAPU, material unless the perjury was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. We're not trying to do that. Instead, he's making a Brady claim with regard to the testimony. This court in Garcia explained the difference, noting that a Brady claim could be made if a witness unintentionally gave false testimony or where the prosecution did not correct testimony it should have known was false, and citing with approval this court's decision in Smith versus Secretary of New Mexico Department of Corrections for the proposition that the failure of a detective to convey information to the prosecutor precluded a NAPU claim, but a Brady claim survived.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Rangel case...
Well, rationally, that has to be the case, because otherwise, I mean, Brady would be totally dependent upon whether a police officer elects to be truthful or elects to conceal evidence from the U.S. attorney or the prosecution.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And I mean, the truth of it is many courts have said...
We're not here to judge attorney conduct. We're here to seek justice.
Precisely. And we cite a lot of those cases, Your Honor, where courts have said that there's no difference between perjured testimony versus suppression of evidence at 42 and 43 of our opening brief. The rationale for the imputation was clearly articulated by the Southern District of New York and the Sanchez case. I think they got it right. And I'll quote, perjury by the government agent can only be a knowing, intentional decision to lie by a member of the institution which is charged to uphold the law and seek just convictions. Therefore, it is a short step indeed to apply case law regarding Brady obligations to instances of perjury. Here, Brady was violated both by the suppression of evidence and by the presentation of perjured testimony. The state argues that, oh, prosecutors can't be held responsible for discovering the perjury of witnesses before trial because, by definition, those witnesses want to keep prosecutors in the dark. But that's unpersuasive and has been rejected by many courts in the suppression context. For police may have the same incentive to keep prosecutors in the dark regarding evidence being withheld, but nevertheless, the law is clear under Kyles v. Whitley that the state has an obligation to disclose evidence known only to police investigators and not necessarily to prosecutors. So we think
was it known that Archuleta was lying at the time?
It was known by Walker. That's the argument.
What evidence do we have of that?
Archuleta's statements.
There you go.
Absolutely.
Is that the end-all and be-all of this case?
Well,
whether or not you believe Archuleta?
Well, the magistrate judge, Your Honor, made credibility findings and found Walker more credible than Archuleta. We believe those findings were flawed. We set that forth in our objections. We set it forth extensively in pages 16 through 28 of our reply brief. All kinds of reasons we believe why Archuleta is more credible here than Mr. Walker.
If we're going to proceed de novo, we're not going to give any credit to the magistrate or the trial court's determination on that point, correct? Or do we owe deference to factual determinations?
Well, the district court didn't give them deference. The district court didn't deal with them. The district court didn't adopt the report and recommendation. The district court went off.
We don't have deference or.
No, I don't believe you do, Your Honor. And I believe one course you can take is to say, look, district court, you got the materiality standard wrong. I mean, what the district court did is two problems with it. District court said, for purposes of the Brady analysis here, the court will assume that Colorado suppressed impeachment evidence, and that had such evidence not been suppressed, it would have been used to impeach Mr. Archuleta's testimony. By its nature, impeachment evidence is not substantive evidence, but instead is material only to undermine the credibility of a witness's comments. Based on these assumptions, the court asked two questions. Was the verdict dependent upon Mr. Archuleta's testimony? And two, was the impeachment evidence necessary to raise doubt as to the veracity of Mr. Archuleta's testimony? Now, that materiality standard is not in the controlling case law. That is not the standard. The standard is whether the suppressed evidence, the absence of the suppressed evidence, undermines confidence in the verdict. You do not look at the record in the absence of the suppressed evidence.
Yeah, your argument is we look at it with it. You
Precisely.
Put it all together, and then you say, is this verdict valid?
Correct.
Yeah.
That's exactly correct, Your Honor. I mean, and as, you know, as this court has said, and we cite Weary and Kyles v. Whitley, but the relevant question for purposes of Brady is what the trial would have looked like with the suppressed evidence. In asserting materiality, in assessing materiality, courts must consider the impact that admission of the exculpatory or impeachment evidence would have. The Supreme Court explained, one does not show a Brady violation by demonstrating that some of the inculpatory evidence should have been excluded, but by showing that the favorable evidence could reasonably be taken to put the whole case in such a different light as to undermine confidence in the verdict. And in Weary, they put it this way. A petitioner must only show that the new evidence is sufficient to undermine confidence in the verdict.
Okay, let's do that. Let's put it all in the pot and look
at it. Absolutely.
Then what do we have?
Your Honor, you have nothing but circumstantial evidence. You have all that was presented here was evidence showing he was at Crazy Mike's bar with Ms. Richards. and that he was in the vicinity of the car wash. There was evidence that he did not tell the truth when the police initially confronted him.
And he left the bar with her.
He left the bar with her.
They had previously, before leaving the bar, had, at least he told the bartender, they had discussed having a one-night stand. So that, sex was on somebody's mind.
Your Honor, I don't believe that that is a fair characterization of the testimony.
Well, help me then.
What I believe the testimony is that the bartender said, "Are you going to get lucky tonight?"
Yeah.
And Mr. LeBaire said,
"Well, were they playing cards or what?"
No, I'm sure they weren't playing cards, Your Honor. But there is no, as this Court noted in the first appeal, there's no other direct evidence other than this confession. And while the State wants to minimize the confession, let me tell you how important Archuleta's testimony was to this case. Archuleta got in the midst of a plea deal.
No, but could you you're getting ahead of yourself. You were just telling Judge Briscoe, and I'd like to know, too. So he says, are you going to get lucky tonight? What did he say?
Mr. LeBaire said,
yeah,
no, because Ms. Richards doesn't believe in one-night stands. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
So
and they leave the bar together. So go ahead with the...
So they leave the bar together. There's videotape of him at a Subway. I mean, they leave the bar together about 12:30, right?
Right.
Next thing you know is there are witnesses that see the fire in the car wash at about 2 a.m. in the morning. Mr. LeBaire is seen on videotape at a 7-Eleven getting a Subway sandwich at 2:35. There's a witness who sees somebody standing at the car wash wearing light-colored clothing. Mr. LeBaire was wearing dark-colored clothing. He had a baseball cap. She testified about a rimmed fishing hat. They tried to test for blood, they tried to test for DNA, they tried to test for hair samples. But when Detective Walker sent those samples to the crime lab, he never asked that they be compared to any samples from Mr. Herring, her fiancé, who she had had a violent relationship with. And they had fought that very night.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's the context in which this confession evidence comes in. And let me tell you how important it was to the State. Because Mr. Walker got in the midst of a plea deal, trying to work a plea deal for Mr. Archuleta, which raised all kinds of problems, right? And there was a motion hearing about that, and they moved to disqualify the prosecutors because they might become witnesses about the plea deal. So the government could have stepped away from Archuleta and could have said, we're not going to use him, right? But they didn't. And they had to bring in special prosecutors to try the case because that's how important Archuleta's testimony was to them.
Well, important in that they were thinking about additional charges, and you only get to the rape issue with his testimony.
But, Your Honor, sure, he testified about sexual assault, but he also testified about going to the canyon. And that time gap,
mm-hmm,
which was critical, filling that 12:30 to 2 o'clock in the morning time gap.
Before you run out of time, I wanted to ask you about the issue of, it's argued vehemently in your brief that Walker basically cooked up this testimony with Archuleta. What do we do with the deputy who was at the jail and reported that Archuleta had this information to tell someone, and that was the first anyone knew about this information, and the deputy tells his higher-ups, and ultimately Walker's brought in, and Archuleta says, this is what I know.
Absolutely. Let me talk about that, because
yeah,
we do address it in the reply brief as well. Your Honor, our position is the Deputy Day report is false. Not that Deputy Day made a false report, but that Archuleta was lying. He's been lying. You got to understand this.
But if he lied to Deputy Day, doesn't that contradict the predicate for your whole argument that this was all concocted by Detective Walker? Because Detective Walker doesn't come into play until he receives the communication from Detective Day.
If I can, let me explain why I don't believe that's the case, Your Honor. Archuleta was a property crime guy, put in a pod with four people who were facing murder charges. Archuleta's mode of operation was always to ingratiate himself and try to do something for himself. He had pending charges at the time. So he saw, he wasn't getting anywhere with Yerke or the others, so he saw an opportunity here. And he makes a report to Deputy Day that says only he talked to LeBert, he confirmed that he did the crime, and he burned the van because that's where he had sex with her. Now, that information about the possible sexual assault was in the media. Obviously, the crime was in the media. That's all that's in the Deputy Day report. By the time we get to trial, we've got a much more elaborate story.
Mm-hmm.
We went to the canyon. That's where he had sex with her. He burned the van because
well,
she could identify
still
him from
the
tattoo.
You still have the confession before he's ever talked to Walker.
But Archuleta's position, Your Honor, is that he doesn't know who the lead investigator is. He has a relationship with Walker. He knows Walker. Walker ends up being the guy who comes to the jail.
Mm-hmm.
His position is Walker wanted to get more information out of LeBert, and Archuleta says, I can't get anything because he won't talk to me. Never has talked to me. And then they build the story.
Mm.
That's the whole point.
Okay.
Just the fact that there was this initial outreach to Dade is typical. I mean, here's the truth.
You're out of time. You're running up here.
Can I say one thing?
One thing.
Archuleta is a chronic liar.
Yes.
Walker acknowledges that, but he's his chronic liar. He puts him on the stand and vouches for him and says, you can believe him in this case because he said it to me and because I corroborated it.
Thank you.
He didn't. And that's in our brief. That was a lie.
We have
Thank you
argument.
Very much.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is John Seidel. I represent the respondents in the case. Your Honor, Judge Briscoe asked a question, and I think I want to start with that question. And as I remember, it was, well, isn't the truth of Ronnie Archuleta's affidavit the be-all, end-all of the case? And I think that's really where it comes down. In fact, one of his opening brief below said, this case turns on the finding that Archuleta's affidavit was the truth and everything else that Walker talked about was false. He can't overcome the Day report.
Well, so your argument is that because Detective Day received this communication from Archuleta prior to Detective Walker coming into the scenario, that Archuleta's a big fat liar. That's what the magistrate judge found. But the magistrate judge really has no authority to make any findings. The magistrate judge only could recommend a finding to the district judge. The district judge declined to adopt those findings. So there are no findings that are reviewable by us that Archuleta told anything at all that was untrue. The magistrate judge recommended something, and that's old hat. So don't we, based on what the district judge did that we were reviewing, don't we have to assume that the facts are as alleged by Mr. LeBert?
I don't think so. I guess my position is that this court can affirm on any ground supported by the record.
And it's well established that there's a lot of cases that say we can affirm on alternative ground, but what I don't know of any case that says that we can, in the absence of a finding by a district judge conducting de novo review of proposed findings of fact, that we can affirm based on our belief that the magistrate judge's recommended factual findings are correct. Because that would put us in the position of affirming on alternative grounds based on our role as fact finders, conducting de novo review of a magistrate judge's recommended findings. And I don't know of any cases that apply this principle in that context.
Well, it is an unusual case in that the magistrate or the district judge doesn't really do one thing or the other with the magistrate's findings. But that said, I don't think that those findings disappear into the ether. My understanding is the way it works is the district court can, you know, either reject or accept the findings or all or part of the findings in the recommendation. Now here, the recommendation is adopted, but for a different reason. And so, in my view, those findings that the magistrate made aren't, they don't just disappear. All we're saying is, if the court had accepted those findings, this court would review them for clearly erroneous. Had they been rejected outright, then we would have come and said, please review this, these de novo. Well, all I'm saying now is on de novo review, that's the most difficult standard for us to, either side to meet. You can look at the entire record of, including the federal record and the state record, and decide that only one question, not a series of specific factual questions. We're only saying the record supports the magistrate's conclusion that it didn't happen the way Archuleta said it.
Well, are we getting caught up in what our scope of review is here? I mean, this is a 2254. This is a state habeas case. Do we care at all what the district court ruled or what the magistrate ruled? Don't we look normally at a state court's last ruling? Unfortunately, here we don't have such an animal. So we're going to look at it de novo.
Right, and I think under de novo review, you can look at everything that's in the record,
mm-hmm.
in the state record and the federal habeas record. And we've got the Day report, which is inconsistent. It shows that Archuleta claimed to have known something about this crime 2 days before Walker interviews him. Now,
does he get into specifics when he talks to the detective, Detective Day?
He does a little bit, not as much as he did with Detective Walker.
Help us recall. What did he say?
He says, I heard Kurt LeBaire, he said he admitted the crime. He burned the van because that's where he had sex with her, and LeBaire isn't handling it too well. If his case goes to trial, he's going to hang himself or commit suicide. Now, it's interesting that at the all through the state trial, Archuleta discusses the fact that he talked to Deputy Day. On his deposition in 2015, he looks at the Day report and he says, oh, that's bullshit. Could never happen. We're on lockdown. But in the brief, we demonstrated, guess what? He wasn't in lockdown. Just like the jail deputy Day said, he was a trustee and he was getting ready for a cleaning detail, and that's when the conversation took place. Now, the Day report, the other side doesn't know about it, didn't know about it until we did discovery in the case. And it caused him to change his theory, as I think Judge Bacharach noted. Early on, in the initial application and in Walker's affidavit, and I'm going to quote from paragraph 8 of the, I believe it's the 2005 affidavit, reports from Walker, quote, not anything from defendant informed me about the charges and formed the basis of my testimony, close quote. That's Archuleta's words. In the original application, page 11, Archuleta further admitted that his testimony was driven solely by the information provided to him by Detective Walker. At page 18 in the application, police reports from Walker formed the basis for Archuleta's knowledge about the charges and it allowed Archuleta to invent the confession. Now, after the day...
Let me ask you this. Because if we proceed de novo, we have to make a determination of fact in order to proceed, either that or, as you say, accept the magistrate's findings, which are not adopted by the district court. Do we have any really other alternative other than to remand this for factual determination?
I would say you do.
Because we're not going to sit as a trial court and make credibility determinations and rule on admissibility of evidence on witnesses that aren't even before us. That seems to be an impossible task.
I would say All you need to say is the record that exists supports the magistrate's conclusions that it didn't happen the way. But if you're not comfortable, well, go ahead.
But we're going to adopt him without knowing a bloody thing about the case, factual on the facts. We'll adopt him even though the district court didn't.
Only after reviewing the record de novo.
Well, now, can I play devil's advocate with you? Because let's say, you know, even if we get past the absence of any case law that I'm aware of, saying that we can put ourselves in the role of the district judge conducting review under Rule 72 or 631B over the magistrate judge's recommended findings. But let's say we do that. Well, the district judge wouldn't apply the standard that you just enunciated to Judge Lucero. The district judge would not, under de novo review, in the presence of an objection by Mr. LeBaire, say, I, district judge, am going to consider whether there was substantial evidence to support the magistrate judge's report recommended findings. The district judge would conduct de novo review. The district judge would either need to listen to the audio of the hearing or conduct his or her own evidentiary hearing or make his or her or apply his or her own independent judgment. But can you cite any case law saying that a district judge, in the presence of an objection by one of the parties, can simply adopt a magistrate judge's recommended factual findings based on the presence of supporting evidence, substantial evidence? I don't think that's the standard even before the district judge, much less us.
Well, I'm not sure I understood all of the question, but I will say this, that the district judge did do a de novo review. There's a footnote.
And rejected it, right? The district judge conducted a de novo review and said, well, did not say Mr. Archuleta is a big fat liar. Right?
No, she, correct.
Right. Never said anything about his credibility, one way or the other. Assumed, arguendo, that he was credible.
Right. And I will say this. After doing the de novo review, doesn't say anything about, other than overruling the objections. I think if the court's uncomfortable doing what we ask it to do, then fine. Remand it.
Remand it to whom?
To the district judge to make findings on that, well, two things.
Or is this a state case?
You would remand it to the district judge to make findings on the truth of the, whether there was actually a suppression.
Well, why?
Now, before we get there, we might have to say, is the materiality analysis flawed?
Well, why remand? You know, why not reverse and remand? Because the whole issue only comes into play not because of what Mr. LeBaire says, but because you're arguing to us that we should affirm on an alternative ground, and if we reject that alternative ground, I don't know why we should remand to the district judge and say, okay, district judge, now you get another shot. You shouldn't have just rejected the magistrate judge's recommended findings out of hand. I'll give you another chance, and we'll retain jurisdiction. I think the scenario would be we reject your argument for an alternative ground for affirmance, and we reverse and remand because of the legal error that Mr. LeBaire identified that you haven't yet addressed, and that is the failure to differentiate between a NAPU claim and a Brady claim for purposes of imputing the detective's knowledge to the prosecutor.
Well, again, that was quite a question.
It was. It was.
Let me see if I can.
Four or five parts of it.
I'm going to address the part that I understood, sort of.
That'd be good.
I think, you know, if you have to remand or reverse the judgment and remand and say, please address some more issues, I'm comfortable with that. What I'm not comfortable with is doing so without addressing, I mean, you have to find that the district court below messed up the materiality analysis. If that's okay, we win. If the materiality analysis is messed up down below, then I think the court can say, all right, now we need to figure out, you can reverse and remand for a determination, a redo of the materiality analysis, and for findings of fact on the actual whether there's a suppression.
Can we do that? Can we say, instead, as counsel would ask us to do, rather than look at the trial without Archuleta and all of this that is now developed, put that in the mix and look at it and determine the question?
I think so.
What is the question? Whether we have confidence in the verdict is as rendered without the evidence that may be material or clearly is material to credibility, and it may have a spillover effect on the merits as well.
I don't.
So what's our question?
The issue is had, and I think the district court did this, the district court assumed the suppression, and then it said, the verdict would not, I don't have any lesser confidence in the verdict that the jury would have reached the same verdict. And there was, which was the correct standard.
Why would it be the correct, okay, let's say that that is the correct standard. But in applying it, let me just ask you to put yourself in the shoes of a juror in the case. And under this hypothetical scenario, you have now heard evidence that the lead detective in the case, Detective Walker, after getting this report from Detective Day, colluded with Archuleta and concocted this whole elaborate scenario of what Archuleta was to testify about. And so, and the lead detective is the one coordinating with all of the other prosecution witnesses that are conducting the forensic evidence and the like. And so now that trial, this hypothetical trial takes place and you're the juror, do you still have the same level of confidence that Mr. LeBeer is going to be convicted just as you did now knowing that a lot of the prosecution witnesses were testifying under the supervision of someone who had fabricated and concocted a scheme to fabricate testimony?
Well, the red light just went on.
Go ahead,
please. As a juror, I already know Archuleta is a liar. Walker said he is. All of his charges are about lies. He admits it before the jury that he made a false report, or at least the jury has information that he falsely reported drug activity. That's why he was terminated as a confidential informant. And he falsely accused another cop of beating him up.
But what if, as a juror, I don't know that in addition to all these little string of Pinocchio behavior, he was also a liar about the facts in this case?
Well, I think the jury...
Hold on. And that the facts in this case are really in substantial dispute once you hear the rest of the story.
I don't think that would have changed the jury.
It may not change your mind as a juror, but what if it changes my mind as a judge?
I think you...
As to whether I have confidence in the verdict.
I don't... My point is that you should not lack confidence in the verdict the jury actually reached, because they, as we know, they chose not to convict. They acquitted on the first-degree murder charges. And we, as the district court found below, there are substantial persuasive circumstantial evidence. I'll give you that. But circumstantial persuasive evidence, it was so strong that the jury would have no reasonable doubt that the defendant was the killer and the arsonist. And Archuleta's testimony, if he had testified just as he did, and then the information came in that he had accused...
I asked a question. I should probably say something. Your time is way over.
Thank you for your response. Thank you both for your arguments this morning. Very well argued. Case is submitted.